Welcome everyone. Welcome back to the Education for Climate Talks. Today, I'm very happy to have with us Jos Eusen. Hello, Jos.
Hello, good morning, Trevor.
So Jos, you're a Dutchman, you're from the Netherlands. You're an academic and a researcher, and you've been involved for many years now in sustainable development. And I should say in transdisciplinary learning or education at large, which is what you're doing at the moment in Maastricht University. But you also founded or you initiated a very interesting project, which is called the Opeduca project, back in 2007. And I'm quoting you because you're giving a description in your website, and it said that project is the first initiative that put education for sustainable development at the base of education, that empowers schools to no longer accept forced upon short-term projects, tools on made-up priorities, but dares to base development on the empowerment of teachers on direct cooperation with the best in industry. So, the learning proposal reaching beyond multi and interdisciplinary to transdisciplinary education. I picked that up in your LinkedIn profile, so it's time for you now to expand on that and to explain where you come from, really, or why you were so interested in sustainable development in your career, and what was the idea behind the Opeduca project. Please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Romero, for this fantastic introduction. I think we should realize that in those years, 2004, 2007, I came from industry. I worked in industry for 25 years. And in those days, we grew very worried about the capacity of our young people to own their future. And we had this very romantic perspective that youngsters no longer have the future. They really are the future. And looking at schools, I grew flabbergasted and a little bit worried when I saw that teachers in the system, and teachers being the most crucial element, the added value we have in education, tended to have become soldiers of schooling, doing things that others thought up for them instead of mastering education. So looking at the future and this growing perspective of education for sustainable development, we saw that again, schools were laden with new priorities like culture and ICT and STEM education, and then education for sustainable development was added. While essentially, sustainable development is about those things that define our future. So it should be very close to the pupils, to the students' learning process. So our initial, very basic proposition was, what if all youngsters in this world can simply, quote unquote, be educated about those things that define their future? So about water and food and energy and care for the elderly. Why don't we allow students to discover their talents to create these themes for a better world? And that appeared to be quite opposite to what was happening in schools, actually, and to the grades of freedom that teachers have. So where teachers appear to understand this very basic proposition, we started to respond to their questions. Where do we get the knowledge? Where do we get the content? And we said the content is out there. It's in home for the elderly, it's on the street, it's in municipalities, it's in industry. So you can go out there, you can tap into the real and bring the real to the student's learning process. So open up your region. That is the basic thought behind open education areas, Opeduca. The comforting thing was that doing so, you can cover the curriculum. You can respond to any examination question. So Opeduca became something looking ahead, dealing with learning and education, and not so much with the school, and not at all with the system. There, of course, conflicts grew, because the system we put in place that was so very well taken care of and thought about for many, many decades, the system became an identity in itself. And that made us angry. So we saw the capacity of teachers, we saw the hope of youngsters and their ability to change. And then we saw a system no longer aware of itself, filled with programs and priorities and consultants and you know, all these agencies and initiatives, it felt like Babylon. It felt like an enormous turmoil where many people trampled on teachers and didn't talk about youngsters anymore and didn't use the word students. So let me sum this up briefly. These basic things we thought about in those years, which were not new, let's be real, real life learning and entrepreneurship and connections with the real and bonding with family, bonding with the streets again, are as old as the road to Methuselah. So it's very human we came up with, very nearby. We didn't want to innovate. We didn't even want to build a new school. It was not the intention. It was just écrit de cœur. It was say, let's learn from the real. Let's create this future together. But the system became unaware of itself. So there is a difference that still exists today, and that fascinated me, and that's why I did my doctoral research on how is it, why is it that we don't grow, that there is no evolution? Do we need a revolution? I don't think we need a revolution. I think we already agree on the many, many things we should do in education. It's old knowledge. We don't need new research, no new programs. We just need to teach serious again. And if the EU Commission should do one thing, give the youth of Europe the chance to discover their development. Let them go out there.
So that brings me very nicely to the second question, but you already touched upon the answer. But as a matter of fact, what you're saying is very true, is that if we are looking at what's happening here and there, in terms of recommendations and coming from the main actors, so Op Educa was among in that list, and it's the case also in the with the council recommendation that was very recently proposed by the member states regarding teaching for green transition. We keep reading mostly the same recommendations, but makes full sense. But exactly what you were saying before, so bridging education with science, opening up the schools to the reality out there and try to bridge with the community in their neighborhoods. Of course, asking scientists, but also why not professionals to come in and bring in their knowledge, go full insist on transdisciplinary, which is absolutely which is absolutely key, of course, has to teachers to work together and give them, of course, the means and train them. So all this is in that very good council recommendation. It's what you recommend. It's what. So that's my question. How can we explain the fact that still it takes time to make change happen? So what would be in your view the main deadlocks, the main obstructions or resistances we are facing? But can explain the fact that it takes time, or are you maybe optimistic, saying no? I mean, things are now going into the right direction, and change is happening. What are your views on that?
Now, first of all, I think change requires time. We now face a system inert, and system should be inert. You know, we especially in the public policy field, like Europe, we don't have to dramatize. There's no need for panic. And I truly believe we can change in 3, 4, maximum 5 years. The main obstacles, what control us now, is first this system, and of course many people mentioned the system as a blockade, but I think we need to be more precise there. We seek to create progress the way we are got used to seeking progress, so through Erasmus and Horizon and conferences and new research. That's the old way of progress. So that's the one blockade, is that education became an industry. We all agree on learning and how we can educate kids. But what we actually talk about is the next level school, or the level above that, the system. So all the talking is on the wrong level. If we go down to the roots of learning and education, many of us agree already. So the transition has to come through learning and education. It cannot come through the system. So we don't need to blame the system, and we don't need to go to walk the streets. We need to allow the pureness of learning to rise again. So that brings us to daily schools, to the teachers employed today. And then we have to realize, we have to accept that because of the past 20, 30 years, what we didn't do correct and most optimal, schools fought inflation in their curricula, in their quality of teachers, in their classrooms. We have inflation in the economic and financial sphere, but we also had our schools inflated. And we should realize that, open our eyes, that perhaps today no more than 20-25% of teachers has the capacity or the trust or the power or the energy to unleash the transition only they can do. So today we face a reality of very scarce resources. Money is placed on the wrong level, and budgets and programs and policy developments. So there are two roads ahead of us. Either we now copy these principles and concepts we all agree on, but mingle them on the wrong level, then we've got a serious problem. Schools will be inflated, more teachers will leave the practice. Or we say, nay, let's perhaps even cut these budgets. Perhaps we should even decimize Erasmus Horizon and all the other programs and put the money where our mouth is and our truth is and our belief is. And that's in the ordinary daily practice. So the scarce resources left now, if I look at teacher capacity, they look back at me with wonder in their eyes again. There is still energy, perhaps with 20-25% of the entire population. So I don't want to insult no teacher, nowhere, absolutely not, but let's face the facts. We have to combine these scarce energies. For example, the European schools, still I sense this opportunity, this potential to connect on a whole horizontal level and get this learning process forward. Perhaps you need only 10-20%, even less, of present budgets. It's not a matter of money. It's a matter of repositioning the teacher, of allowing youngsters to discover their talent. And talent doesn't come timely. There is no agenda for talent. You cannot enforce it by nice videos or listening to AI or being popular. Kids need time to grow, to play, to reflect, to fail, to fall, and get up again. And that time is very precious. So we should embrace that time we need, re-educate, strengthen our teachers, and realize there is no magical wand we can wave anymore. But stop the investing in the old system. Cut down budget, invest it where it counts, and dare to build on teachers again. I cannot underline that enough. Teaching for 700,000 years in our development has been a human-to-human thing. It has very little to do with computers and concepts and nice words and warm policies. It's just people to people's business. Get a deck there. So the two big points. Yes.
Let's go back to, go to that point now, because precisely I would like, so thank you. It was very interesting. I understand that you agree with the fact that it takes time. Of course, we can't change things from one day to another. And there's no silver bullet or magic wand, that's for sure. So you want to focus very much on teachers, so we understand that, and to give them the possibility to implement the change which is needed. Curriculum design might be interesting, but it might be becoming something also very very complex, it's true. So let's focus now, if you agree, on the main priorities, in your opinion, or the main recommendation. The first thing that should be done, in a way, to initiate the change in the system, as you were referring to before, so that it can be really implemented. What would be your main recommendation regarding that, the things to be done?
Okay, the main recommendation has various blocks. First, don't change what we have now. So don't go tweaking curricula, don't change examination, just leave them there, freeze frame. Many wise people thought about these things, they're not foolish, they're not silly, we got them. If we turn to transdisciplinary education, so allow youngsters with their teachers to study and learn and understand what defines our future. We got main themes like food, water, energy, construction, safety, care for elderly people. These main themes, studied transdisciplinary in the real, will answer all present curricula and examination demands. So we will tick them off. There is no need to change from the old perspective. There is no requirement to go to war, to innovate, to be popular. Just leave it there. But give reality a chance to effectuate this transdisciplinary learning, and don't be afraid. Parents, school leaders, other teachers, don't be afraid no more. If our kids study the food system in Europe, our minerals, the way we manage our water, the way we take care of people, the way we produce and consume healthcare, they will answer all these questions, all these bits of knowledge and competences. They will develop them. So take away the fear, take away the interference, take away the unrest. And European Commission, speak in words of faith and trust again. There is still capacity lingering here. There is still transition possible, but now we have to shine a light on that transition capacity and not let them obey to the old. Again, don't destroy the old. No reason for revolution. We will comply with everything required now and then go beyond what is required now. That is the best thing to do. And to put it more practical, I would love to congratulate a 15-year-old who's studying and working and going around in the world by knocking on her shoulder and say, hey, by the way, you just passed examinations. You didn't notice. But here's the paperwork we used to give to students. But please go on. Don't be disturbed. So give youngsters a chance to discover their development tremor. That's the whole thing. That's all we have to do.
Thank you for these very wise words. But precisely, yes, I was thinking, based on the example you just shared with us, don't you think that your recommendation of about the fact that you say that we can keep the system the way it is and we will help them evolve and make the transition into education, not to, you know, making a big revolution, as you said, this entails the fact that we need anyway to change something regarding the exam system, the assessment system, because most of the teachers I know are complaining about the fact that they say, okay, at the end of the day, I think that I'm teaching because of the exam, but the main objective is the exam, and I'm losing time and sometimes inspiration also to think to try to do other things because of the exam. What do you think about that?
Yes. Let me put that way first, answer it this way first. While we sometimes think that students are afraid of the exam, it might be so, and I find that more and more, I discover that more and more, that teachers are afraid of the exams, and they hide behind them. You know, if the European Commission would command me or say, just the exams and curriculum are holy, I said, great, it's Tai Chi, give me your exams, we will handle them. You have a curriculum, and no problem. We will handle the curriculum, but let us teach and learn, please. So there will be an educational process with concrete results and also opening up for other means to qualify our students and to enjoy their progress. But the exams and the curriculum we can take off along the way. So there will be these festive moments for each individual student to be tapped on the shoulder or handed a present and said, just last week, you did your exam, you finished it, but you didn't notice. But don't let me disturb you, head on with what you're doing. So it might be so that these wonderful, nice people, these teachers, became afraid. And one of the aspects I found, why are they afraid, is perhaps they haven't been allowed to build, a little bit technical word, Tamer, associative capacity. So if you learn from the real, and if you understand gas production, or the production of shoes, or dirty industry and fashion, you have to be within the real. It needs competence of teachers to understand how the world came about, how it is today, and how it can unfold. You need that capacity to sit with your students and say, here is this tiny bit of info, this mini competence we're touching on now, and that's a red flag also belonging to the exam. So let's take care of that. So there's a pathway ahead of us full with green flags and joy. And on that pathway, we also put red markers, not because they are dangerous, but as points of attention and say, remember these red flags, these represent the old exam questions. So should you rush along and not pay attention, I as teacher will take the flag and say, wait a moment. Are we competent to answer this question? Or did we develop that skill? So it's not one way or the other. It is like I just referred to as Tai Chi. Take the movement, take the exams and curricula, and don't be afraid anymore. Control them. As I said earlier, teachers should become masters of education again and not soldiers of schooling. And they are so today. So there is my primary concern. And I think also my primary advice to policy, regenerate teaching capacity and allow also young teachers during their teacher training to be out in the real. That's most important. They should understand, each teacher, not when you teach biology, you should understand physics and mathematics, but also politics and also geography. You cannot work for one discipline alone anymore. So we need a teacher that blossoms with energy, is out in the world. As soon as students notice that full human capacity, they will open up also. So if we seek these more modern-like assessments to evaluate students, they will offer themselves these opportunities. They will arise by taking the learning process serious again and not decimize it, not put it on lists to tick off and silly one-day projects and then one-off results. That's the old system that would like to put it in lists and that would like a case-based learning. So let's all make cases and then evaluate the case. No, the whole life is a big case. There's a multitude of cases we have to learn from. Students can do that. Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. Thank you. Final conclusion. Thank you again.
Okay. Bye-bye, Clemio.